Ladies and gentlemen, we have another big challenging session this afternoon with four speakers. We're going to break it up and first of all have Rosalie Nelson from IDC with a bit of Q&A, and then we'll bring the other three speakers up for their sessions. We'll do Q&A at the end just to break it up a bit for you. After Rosalie's bit is when you're meant to get up and do your jig and stretch and do all those sorts of things. Just remember, focused on the idea that when we finish these 2 hours, we have an important function to perform, which is to make sure that Juniper feels they get value for their money from their networking drinks by having lots of people there drinking. Hopefully you will all be able to join us for that important session. So that brings us, and feel free as the afternoon goes on to keep thinking of things to put on our big message board at the back. Your contributions will all be valuable. I see that there are some people who are getting into the process already. That then brings us to our first speaker for the afternoon, who is, as I said, Rosalie Nelson. Rosalie is now IDC New Zealand's telecommunications, responsible for IDC New Zealand's telecommunications research program and consultancy practice. And as you see from the description before you, she has an extensive background in this field. What Rosalie is going to do for us today, and if this is a great challenge, and I think she's been travelling with the doctor, because she is going to tell us what the future will look like, or at least she's going to try to answer that question. So can you please welcome the doctor's new travelling companion, Rosalie Nelson.
Actually, I do wish that I did have a TARDIS and I could go ahead about a good 10 or 15 years and then come back and really look as if I knew what I was talking about. First of all, it's a real privilege to have the opportunity to come here today. I guess for some of you here, I'm representing those who are the providers of the smart networks. For some of you here, they'll see me as representing the plumbers. I really want to look at or start to address one of the issues that has been raised throughout the morning, and that is around if we're building these next generation networks, if we're going towards this platform of fibre to the premises, what does that mean to the business models? And where do the telcos who are actually investing that money sit in the value chain? But because it's just after afternoon tea, what I'd really like to start with is Hollywood. And I'm going to go back to 1989 and a movie called Field of Dreams. Now, I'm going to show my age here by saying I do actually remember going along to see it at the time. And it was a fairly whimsical movie about an Iowa farmer who's out there in the cornfields. And then he hears this voice saying, if you build it, they will come. So he feels compelled to do that. And he starts to mow up his cornfield and build a baseball pitch out in the middle of nowhere. Now, of course, the problem when you actually do that is you have to rely on somebody coming. He didn't go out to the local schools or put out marketing leaflets. In fact, what arrived were a number of ghost players from a disgraced Sox baseball team from around about 60 years earlier. But herein became a problem. They came and they were playing on the field. They were having a great time on the facilities that he had purchased, but he was going bankrupt, because he wasn't making any money out of this. So ultimately, he had to go out and, with a fair bit of supernatural support, find the coach, find some of the key players, and actually create something that was compelling, that would attract people to come along, pay money, and justify the investment that he'd made. Now, of course, this is Hollywood, so it all did have a very happy and somewhat whimsical ending. But, of course, it doesn't take rocket science to see where the parallels are here for our industry when we start talking about if we build it, will they come? The fact is that we can't actually just sit there and rely on the fact that they will come. We know that at some point the demand and the users will come. But if we don't want to find ourselves in a situation of straitened circumstances or failure, and I have to say we saw it in Europe in the dot-com years with the early build, the users came, but the reality was they didn't come in time for a lot of those carriers. we need to start thinking about the ecosystem and about what the role is that the telcos need to play. So I'm just going to start off with looking a little bit at the playing field and what's creating the playing field. And then I'll go into the game plan and finally what it might take to actually score the home run. Now, if we're looking at the New Zealand market today, now this is the telecommunications market excluding IT services. You have to say it's not the most exciting picture. The revenues have been flat. We track the market on a quarter-by-quarter basis. And we're looking at a 1% revenue decline over the past year, even though there has been subscriber growth and, of course, revenue growth within that. And the blue line that you're looking at down the bottom there, that's the fixed line services. The silver and the gold line in the middle are your data and your broadband, and then your mobile is your red line up the top. Now, of course, the issue that's been confronted here is the fact that the legacy revenues, primarily around voice and calling, these are eroding and they're not yet being offset by the growth in broadband data and services revenues. And this does in part reflect the nature or the structure of the market here in New Zealand, and that Telecom still has 58.2% revenue market share. It is a very powerful and dominant incumbent, even in this environment. And yes, it has lost about 2% of that revenue market share over the last year, but of course, the results you see in the overall market also very significantly reflect Telecom's own structure and the challenges that it faces within its legacy network. There is the good news, of course, of what we're seeing on the broadband front, and we have seen broadband subscriber and demand growing over the past year. We've had a broadband subscriber growth rate over 2008 of 17.6%, and that by mid-year had us as the sixth highest growth rate in the OECD. That rate of growth has slowed down to around about 3% and 2% in the last two quarters, partially a function of penetration, partially a function of the economic downturn. But nevertheless, we are seeing that growth and migration taking place. However, it does become interesting because if you look at the sort of CapEx that's been talked about for New Zealand in a market that's worth, what, $5.7 billion in 2008, then you start to see a very challenging business case. Now, this is by no means a detailed CapEx picture for New Zealand. This is just simply a back-of-the-envelope calculation based on what we're hearing from the announcements in the market today. 2.9 million. It excludes a lot of the network investment and the other types of investment that are actually taking place in the market. So is that a justified leap of faith in a market which is pretty flat, where the revenues are declining? Well, you'd actually have to say it's actually a necessary move for the market. And the reason for that is, and it was really alluded to by Tim earlier, is the fact that the migration to IP-based networks is actually critical for the industry. We have got growth in demand. We have got changes in consumer behaviour. We can't rely on the legacy networks to continue to support that demand and growth. And we need to reduce cost. And so we're going from the situation of the spaghetti of networks and platforms and services, which is the spaghetti allegory, to one of lasagna, where you're actually seeing that separation between the transport and the services layer. Now, I don't want to actually labour this too much, but it's just saying that we have this migration that's taking place that is necessary for cost reduction, services management, competitiveness and sustainability. But at the same time, this is fundamentally changing the business model for the telcos. Because if you look at where we've come from, the whole premise for the telecommunications carrier was built around network ownership as being a point of differentiation. You had the network, you built the platforms and the services on top of that, and then you sold those services to your subscribers, as it was described. And you might have a little sort of sliver of wholesale on the side. But now, we've already seen a more horizontal disaggregation, I guess, within the market. You've got the breakout of infrastructure with Chorus. You've got Chorus supporting Telecom Wholesale as an active wholesaler to third parties who are then providing their services. And you've also got the unbundling service provider, not only providing services to their own users, but also wholesaling to other third parties. So that's changing the nature of the industry. And then if we start to move towards this open access model that's been talked about today, then you have your passive infrastructure operator. And then on top of that, you'll have another active IP layer, wholesaler. And then the real competition takes place at the services level. Now, what I really, I guess the point that I want to talk to here is the fact that we're now moving towards where networks are an increasingly shared resource. And it means that the services become an absolutely critical point of differentiation. But then that creates some real challenges for the telco. Because when they start to move into services, this is where they start to clash and find the blurring of boundaries with the other industries, the IT sector, with the IT services, with the internet, with media. So there is a dilemma of does a telco go back to stick to the knitting and the core of what it knows to do and really focus on becoming a good wholesaler, or does it begin to push into new markets? So this is where I really want to start to look at the game plan. Now, when I was looking at this, being conscious that I had 20 minutes, I thought I could actually start to talk about everything that's happening with telcos moving into IT services and the potential within cloud computing. But in many ways, that is a trend that is happening and creates opportunities but is very much commercial. And I think the issue for us as an industry, if we start talking about fibre to the premises, is really looking at what is the consumer demand? What is it that they actually want to do? And more importantly, what is it that they need that will drive demand for bandwidth and also generate revenues? Of course, when you start talking about what consumers want, it's both simple and incredibly complex. They want everything. And we're seeing both in communications the shift towards more personal and desire for presence. We've got broadband, security and content, as well as the functionality that surrounds issues like metering and monitoring and storage. And all of this being synchronized together. And if I was to really summarize some of the trends that we're seeing at the moment, there are so many boundaries that are blurring in the way that consumers are accessing and receiving information. The boundaries between what's personal and professional are beginning to significantly change. The boundaries between what's fixed and mobile, those distinctions for a lot of consumers are becoming increasingly irrelevant. But of course, when you start to look at what's going to drive broadband demand, then you have to start looking at and looking at video as being a key part of that particular picture. When you start to think about 100 megabits per second and you're looking at symmetrical speeds, then you begin to think about multi-channel, high-definition video on demand that's been delivered and served to multiple devices within the home. Now, of course, when the telcos actually start to look at that, and this has been a key drive for the next thing, that's when they start thinking about IPTV. So, okay, if we're going to be moving towards and seeing these boundaries blur with the media industry, then maybe we should become media players. And we've seen this quite significantly in a lot of the European markets over the past sort of 5 or 6 years, and I know many of you here will be familiar with that. But here's the problem, because a lot of the telcos have taken their vertical aggregation model that they've had in their home market and tried to leverage that across into markets that are mature, that are highly competitive, that have entrenched competition from both cable and satellite, and often digital terrestrial. And they've not had, this is where all the weaknesses of that strategy have come up, because they've not had any expertise. The network is no longer the core point of differentiation. It all becomes about the content and that access to content. And they've struggled to get both access to the content and get the right sort of service windows, to get the right exclusivity, and as well as actually being able to deliver a really compelling or good service to the consumers in the home. So you've got the traditional pay TV providers that have their vertically integrated model. I can think of Sky in this particular case. But then on the other side, you also have the over-the-top internet TV providers. Companies like Hulu and Juiced, and I guess BBC iPlayer would be a part of that, who have the aggregation, but they're just basically bypassing all the traditional channels, and their arrangements will mainly be, how do we get the content caching that we need locally? How do we make sure that we've got the right billing in place? They don't see the network as necessarily a hugely valuable part. So this really takes us into a view of where do the telcos need to start thinking about their positioning. If we're looking, again, this is the IPTV in Western Europe. And as you can see down in the 2007 and 2008 part of it, it is a small part of the market still. It is growing, and we are forecasting a 44% compound annual growth rate. But quite a lot of that has been driven from countries like France, where, for example, France Telecom has been able to do well because it hasn't faced the kind of mature competition that's been existing in other markets. It has bought an ARPU line to the telcos, and I think the key thing that it's really delivered is not so much margin and a silver bullet for revenues, but what it has delivered is growth and demand for broadband and bandwidth. It's allowed them to attract users that wouldn't otherwise be interested in broadband, and it's also allowed them to use that to piggyback other services on top. So what does that actually mean in New Zealand? Well, I guess from my perspective, there are real challenges with any kind of IPTV business case here in New Zealand. And yet we have to actually recognise that entertainment and video and interactivity are going to be a core part of what will drive consumer demand for broadband. I think the opportunity here is to start to serve the domestic CIO. There is an enormous amount of complexity that is now entering the home in terms of all the devices that need to be connected, in terms of all the networks and the services. We're only really at an early stage of the whole mobile broadband and wireless broadband path. But when you start to think about what wireless broadband can begin to bring to the whole picture, in terms of presence, in terms of location, in terms of context, in terms of relevance and ubiquity, that role of being the glue, of being the integrator, of using the connectivity that is a natural part of what telecoms do, there is a real potential value within that. And I would actually argue that that's really the space that the telcos have the opportunity. In the first stages, it ends up being around bundling, you know, the one customer service, one bill, discount bundles of just your core telecom services, and that's just a cost-saving measure. But the next stage is when we really start to get towards the integrating, integrated billing solutions, integrated identity, simplified access across devices. And then moving towards the enabling, the home management systems, home working and remote access, actually exploring this divide between the professional and the consumer, the personal, you know, this prosumer market that exists. Security, one device. There's many, many tools that can actually exist within this market and levers that the telco can start to pull. But I do have to say, and I'd really pick up strongly on what Tim says here, this is not actually about technology. This is not about telcos creating a technology and then trying to roll it out to market. It's about really understanding what the end users want, how they're starting to use devices, how they're starting to use networks and technology, and then being there to actually service and help them to manage those needs simply. There is, of course, a role for aggregation as well, but then you have to think about what is it that you're aggregating and what value can you bring to that. If you're thinking about a role as an aggregator of content, then you've got a whole lot of issues that are around rights, around brand associations, around aggregation, who are the advertisers that you're going to get, exclusivity, release windows, actually getting premium rights. The role of an aggregator of content is not a simple one, but the role of actually creating a platform that becomes an aggregation point for those who provide the applications and the services, that becomes a far more interesting business model. So, I'm not sure how much time I've spent here, 5 minutes. So if we're looking ahead at the moment and we're starting to think about what are the various roles that the telco can play, I have to say there is no silver bullet in this. There are different roles which will actually depend upon the players themselves. In terms of the wholesale role, that is actually a very valuable one, I believe. It does require scale, both geographic and in terms of the network itself, in order to drive down cost, geographic presence. It does require rapid and flexible service delivery. And you need to be able to not just deliver the transport, but also deliver the transport plus services. But there is a role, and that is, I believe, a valuable role for the telco to play in the market. Then there's what I'd describe as the managed connectivity. And that's really anchored around the customer relationship and around the connectivity. And also the actual very detailed information that telcos have, but very rarely exploit, about subscriber use and behaviour on the network. But even here, if you want to take that role, you still need scale to actually attract the partners to come in and become part of this ecosystem. You still need to have the network quality and the coverage. You have to have the right operating service systems and very good billing systems in order to manage it. And there needs to be an openness and a willingness to share. One of the challenges, and I've talked a lot with the content industry as well as the telcos in the past, and one of the biggest issues has often been that around the revenue sharing and how much value the telcos believe the distribution over the network should carry and how much they want to charge the content providers and the application providers in order to do that. Then there are those, and I would, I guess, look at Telstra as being one company that's trying to do this at the moment, who will try and position themselves as the full service providers. Again, they'll be looking at scale to attract audience, but you need to have cash to burn. So, for example, let's just look at the IPTV market. What kind of payback period are you looking at? Well, Sky TV in New Zealand took about 10 years before it started to break even. We're typically hearing with a lot of the IPTV providers in Western Europe, it's about 7 years. There is a very, very big upfront investment. And if the telcos want to start to play as the IT services providers or as the media owners or the television providers, they need to be in there for the long haul and they need to restructure their thinking as well as their culture in order to actually manage that. And again, experience, track record, and network quality and coverage all become absolutely critical as part of that. So just in summary, and of course this is a very, and particularly deep, there's a lot more ground that could be covered within this, but I just wanted to give a high level overview, just to point to the fact that the industry structures are changing, and the older business models will not work. The telcos need to really start to think about where do they play in the sector, because they are part of a much larger ecosystem. And what they might think is their value to another provider, to another player, that player may not regard as valuable at all. So they need new channels and new partnerships and new ways of thinking. The opportunity here is also to embed communications into other processes. Instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and redo all the applications themselves, have that open partnership model, but ensure that what they can bring to the table in terms of communications and connectivity become a part of that picture. And then really concentrate on understanding the potential to serve the domestic CIO as those needs become rapidly more complex and more difficult to manage. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Rosalie. Nice of you to give us that view from your TARDIS. The interesting element of that was your suggestion about the need to service the domestic CIO. One of our earlier panellists suggested that what telcos needed was some good marketers. It was Ernie, I suggest. And I must admit, one of the things I find fascinating, having worked inside telcos for some time, is the fact that, of course, most of the marketers and engineers are people who don't need a domestic CIO. They actually are tech savvy enough, and it's actually one of the really interesting processes to see them happily going through their thoughts about, well, of course the customer can do blah, blah, blah. You know, what? It's a very interesting process. Does anyone have any quick questions for Rosalie on her forecast of the future? You must have one, because if you don't have one, I'll have One. Any hands? No hands? I've always found the IPTV model a particularly challenging model for most of the reasons that you mentioned. Most notably that it's actually an area that telcos know nothing about.
Yeah.
And yet they all blithely talk about IPTV as if it's going to be just something easy to do because they know how to run networks. What's the best performing IPTV model that you've seen?
What you hear and what's reality, I think, are two quite different things. I mean, the one that often gets cited as being the most successful would be PCCW's Now TV in Hong Kong. And it is certainly one of the largest pay TV providers, and they're moving from not just being an aggregator, but also looking to start to get into the production side to it. But also, if I talk to my colleagues in Hong Kong about this, they will say, there is, when you try to get to the heart of the value of that business case, it becomes immensely challenging because a lot of the a la carte options are bundled into the broadband plan itself rather than paid for separately, and there is not a lot of money that's really been made from it. But I guess, like a lot of the other IPTV providers, what they're seeing it as is a means of attracting those customers who would not otherwise want broadband, driving demand for higher value broadband packages, and using it as more a tool for acquisition and retention. But I do have to say, that's a costly way to get into acquisition and retention.
I think you're potentially right. I have two Australians at the back vying for attention. Be warned, if there's a Kiwi in the room who's got a question, you get preference.
Yeah, thanks.
There's one over there.
I'm sure this is not going to be difficult.
Okay, well, whilst the microphone gets the Kiwi, I'll put up with you, John.
Talking about IPTV.
Name?
Oh, John Burton from Australia.
Thanks.
Yesterday. And I'm going back there too, thank God someone said. Anyway, talking about IPTV, I sort of wonder, because all the young people and even some of the older people I know, leaving aside some comments from over there, they all use peer-to-peer. So why would they want to actually pay for something when they all have these 5 terabit drives which are absolutely filled with any film or any whatever that they want to use?
I think that's true. I think, first of all, we need to make a little bit of a distinction here between, because IPTV is generally, even though it is technically a television-based service that's been delivered over an IP platform, it is generally related to a service that is delivered with quality of service to a set-top box for viewing over a television screen, as opposed to the over-the-top internet model, which is either via an aggregator or maybe via peer-to-peer as a part of that. And I think there are those who will use and continue to use peer-to-peer, but there are many who will actually want, and our own studies and research have indicated that when we've said to them, what is it that you would like in terms of video? The first thing that they've said right now is that they don't use internet video, not because of speed, not because of bandwidth constraints, because it's not interesting. There is not a lot that's interesting for them to view. And that came from 40%, and that was mainly those who are over 25. So yes, they used, they used YouTube and they used music videos, but they were not compelled by what was available. And what they wanted was access to a sizable database of content that they could access on demand and that they could use across a number, not just on the internet, but could also route through their TV as well. And so even though there is that market for peer-to-peer, there is also a much greater mass market of people who actually want to have something that's organised and coordinated for them that is simple to use and cost-effective.
Thank you. And we had the question over in the corner.
Ray Seti here from SwiftNet. My question starts with what you've been touting. A lot of it's around money. We've got this layered system, and it's been split up. And at the bottom, it's got this wholesaler. When is the time when the wholesaler has got his return on an investment and it's now time to share it with the consumer?
I guess it does depend upon, it comes back to the fundamentals of the model of what initially funded that wholesaler, who is it that the money has to return to, and whether it's a public-private partnership within which there may be some kind of community or social good that gets served back as part of it. It really comes down to what was the original, what's the business model and the funding support model.
Okay, I'm going to take the two more questions. People have got microphones. One over there, then back to Mr. Darling.
Hi, I'm Donald Laurie from Investment New Zealand. And Rosalie, you answered that question really well. But just as I have a bit of experience of IPTV and ADSL services myself, the answer to that question, and it's quite a telling point, I think, for all the things that we're talking about here, networks and as opposed to services and content as opposed to networks, is the key thing for IPTV, for any pay TV system, is actually not what's in the box or what you can get through the box. It's how it's organised, which is why companies like Sky in the UK and Sky here and any other, France Telecom, etc., spend so much time on their EPG. Mm. It's all about how stuff is served up, and you all know the familiar mantras about lean forward versus lean back medium. But television and this sort of market is still entertainment. People, a classic example in the UK is Home Choice when they first started. Now they're called Tiscali, but they provided an ADSL video on demand network around the London area. Masses of good content. You turn it on, it looks like the yellow pages. No one was interested. People want stuff that's organised for them around familiar stuff. And that's why also IPTV systems are usually typically associated with existing, often DTT services. You get what IPTV is for the telco point of view is usually a pass-through DTT service. France Telecom's the classic example, or BT Vision actually is a better example in the UK. That's Freeview plus video on demand, and video on demand is really the key part. But so that's part of that part. But the second point is, and I'm interested in you talking about another ARPU line, because in my experience, what seemed to be the case in Europe and the United States is, in fact, IPTV ADSL television is only an anti-churn thing. You know, it's really not about making more revenue.
What I would add on that is that it will add, because that was one of the original attractions that got a lot of people into it, is that they would actually look at the ARPU line. What they were not looking was the APU line, which is the average profitability per user. So, you know, you could have your £25 or £50, you know, as it was subscription per month. So that looked good on a pure sort of top-line revenue line. But when it actually came down to profitability and margins, that's where you don't see that.
Extraordinarily difficult to make money out of, even in a developed market. Yeah.
And so I think, I mean, the key thing that I was really trying to say here was not really an expose on IPTV, but was just to talk about the challenges of the telco taking their traditional mindset and business models and way of thinking and leveraging that across into one of the other markets. We see some of the same sort of thing going on in the IT services market. And what we really need to start to see is a different approach, and a large part of that is really around shifting towards understanding the consumer, not just thinking about what you deliver, you know, to the local point of presence, but actually starting to think about what you really do deliver in the home and how that actually affects the consumer.
This is going to be a real challenge for telcos. We're going to ask them to understand the consumer. Peter, did you have a question or observation? You can do it sitting down.
Thanks. A very brief question and observation. It appears that New Zealand, like Australia, is a standards taker. So the role of the domestic CIO is one which really depends on the existence of standards for a lot of the integration of the different sorts of equipment that you're talking about. It seems to me that that does depend on developments internationally before we can actually undertake that to any significant extent.
I think that's a very fair and a valid comment. But at the moment, there seems to be a fair number of workaround solutions and cracking solutions that are actually taking place. And it would seem to me that there is a real opportunity to start to make this into something that is easier for the customers to actually do, rather than having to do these sort of workaround and breakaround solutions.
Yeah. Now, I have to make a comment there, because I think if Stefan was here, he'd be pointing out the fact that there's absolutely no reason why New Zealand needs to be a standards taker. You become a standards taker because you become a standards taker. If you want to be not a standards taker and decide you want to be an active participant in those processes, you can be, but that's a choice point. It's not a definition that needs to necessarily follow. That said, my small advertisement for Australia and New Zealand. We do need to cut Rosalie off there, because we do have our next three speakers to come along. So could I ask you all in the usual way to thank Rosalie for her contribution?